Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Donna Netwig and I'm your host, and my show is Women on the Journey, Tales from the Trenches. And our topic today is the unexpected on the journey. And I'm very excited about our interview. The interview today is with about a woman's journey of questioning and realizations that resulted in really a must-read book. I really loved it. Unintentional Accomplice. Our leading lady today is Carolyn Baker. So, Carolyn, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to write this book?
Oh, good morning, Donna, and thank you so much for having me on. I'm really happy to share a little bit about my background. And as you said, there's some unexpected aspects of my background that brought me to the place that I am today. And really, it's about my discovery of how I was an accomplice to white privilege. And this was a topic that I really had no awareness of, and something that I certainly hadn't confronted in my own life. I had a very long career in the nonprofit sector where I felt myself a helper to the people that were, quote, less fortunate, or those that didn't have the equal opportunities, without ever really questioning why it was that those perpetual winners and losers existed and persisted. So I'm in my 30-year career in a C-level position, and I came across the quote by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and he said this: philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause the philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice which make philanthropy necessary. And when I read that, it was definitely an aha moment, and there had been many, but I knew at that moment that I was going to have to stop what I was doing and do something different. And that's when I started to get involved in the racial and social justice work.
Beautiful. Now, writing doesn't come easy to most people. So how did you end up being triggered and shifted into a new perspective? And what made you go towards writing a book? Because that's a big leap, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, there's a wonderful author by the name of Julia Cameron. And 25 years ago, she wrote a book called The Artist's Way, and it's really about finding our true interests. And one of the things she talks about is the shadow. If you like to read a lot, you're probably a shadow writer. Or if you really love art and you're a collector of art, you may actually be an artist. Or if you're a music lover, you actually may be a musician. This idea that whatever we're drawn to in that way is telling us something. So I would have to say that I've always been a writer and had a pretty good skill set around writing, but that was because that wasn't in my job description. It was writing grant proposals to the federal government, to the state government, county, city. These were proposals that had to be very carefully written. So I was doing a lot of writing. However, it was technical writing from my head to my, you know, just intellectual ascent to ideas.
Got it. But exactly.
Then one day, a friend of mine said, you know, Carolyn, I'm participating in this thing called National Novel Writing Month. And this happens every November. It's open to anyone that wants to write during the month of November 50,000 words. Nobody reads it. There's no editing. There's no revising. It's just writing every day. And I remember I just literally almost jumped out of my chair to hear more about that. And I signed right up. It was November 2nd or 3rd. I was a couple days late. And I just started writing. This was maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And so I would do that every November. I would write, and it would be fiction. But then in 2018, I had stepped down from my career in nonprofits, and I really was just sort of writing about things in general. You know, Julia Cameron talks about write your morning pages, where you just write three pages of everything, whatever. Like sometimes it's very esoteric. Sometimes it's, oh, I got to remember to buy cat food. It's this wild mix of things that are just on my mind. And so I started that with Morning Pages, and it turned out that I was looking at my career. I was looking at my position at now what's next. And the issues of race and socioeconomic disparities really kept coming up in those Morning Pages. So I just kept writing, and by the end of November, pretty much I had the manuscript, very rough draft, was there at the end of that 2018 National Novel Writing Month.
Oh, my. So it kind of was bubbling up over years, and then it just happened, it sounds like. It just all just came forth.
I have to say that that's right. And I really believe in the power of that moment when that happens, that it really isn't out of nowhere, that it really has been something that's perhaps been trying to come forth, but I didn't really give it that open door or that portal. And, yes, it was just there. And the way that it took off from there really, it almost feels like a prayer. It almost feels like an offering that, please use me along these lines. And so I'm just open to keep going with this, you know, whatever form it takes.
See, I'm a true believer this topic has to be discussed. We refuse to have the conversation in this country, and I think it's so timely and it's so important at this time. It does seem just perfect. But did you have some hesitations here, fears? All of a sudden you have a book, and then what happened? What did you do with this manuscript?
Well, like many authors, I had 5 or 6 manuscripts that I did nothing with because I just didn't want to put them out in the cold light of day. But something about this one, as you say, it just felt like it was a really important, for myself, it was really an important exercise for me to confront and interrogate my own internalized racism, my own learned prejudices. And that's really what I did during the book. I just look at my own life decade by decade to see how it was that I came to my own position as a white woman. So in sending out the manuscript, I got a call back from my publisher, Gabrielle David, with Two Leaf Press, which is a women of color led and founded press. And they're devoted to diverse voices. And it's a really marvelous publishing endeavor. I encourage everyone to look at Two Leaf Press and see the amazing authors that are there. And Gabrielle said, I'm interested in your manuscript, but I suggest these books for you to read so that you can really get a more thorough understanding of the full American experience. And so I started reading, and I started being more honest and digging deeper, reaching further. And as I did this over the course of perhaps 6 months to almost a year of interacting with Gabrielle, who's a woman of color, that I really had the opportunity to have a marvelous interaction and to grow myself, and that's reflected in the book. And I have to really commend her on her generosity of spirit to do that, because the onus is not really on women of color to do this explaining and educating. It's really, it's the work that white women need to do to understand mm-hmm. the historical and psychological aspects of the experience of women of color. So I just read a lot. And in my book, there's 5 pages of a bibliography of suggested reading. And there's also an anti-racism checklist, things that I just have discovered that I want to do in my own heart and mind. And perhaps there's people like me out there that would like to also do that work.
Mm-hmm. I really love this book. There were, first of all, the pictures, the photos were absolutely charming. I really did enjoy that. But it really is a personal journey of you diving into your own thoughts, your own behavior through your entire lifetime. So it's very open and very personal, and I found that very beautiful. And we all live in these transparencies, these beliefs that are so invisible to us. We have no idea our behavior, why we're behaving the way we are, and why we're believing what we do, and we don't stop to question. And you really took a deep dive into questioning everything throughout your whole life. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think that's a really important experience that I had, was realizing that things were not what they seemed. Or my narrative really was a very narrow, isolated narrative. So that discovery is a little uncomfortable. And so,
yeah.
And yet we can't stop there. There's often a phrase related to this. It's called white fragility, that people are discussing and books have been written, that we can't stop there and say, well, this is too uncomfortable. I don't want to confront this. I don't want to own this. But we can't stop there and let that be just like even the concept of woke. You know, it's a word that I don't use because it also has some aspect of that the white superiority to it. Now we're woke, whereas people of color have been woke their entire life. I mean, for centuries they've been living this. So it's really not a, for me, the idea of my place now is to amplify the voices of people of color. It's not for me to be the speaker. Like even in my book, it's really to help white people see it's not for us to ask people of color to help us be woke or to, it's not, that's, that can't be the end game. With that, because insight without action is just, it's just meaningless. So to be realizing how, as an accomplice, that's the title of the book, I'm an unintentional accomplice, that they're really in the coming days, I need to continue to be calling out racism when I see it and being an active ally and supporter of the voices of women of color, of people of color. And so as I think I've said to you in the past, I'm now that person who can just wreck every dinner party. because
I love that,
like,
and I understand that. Yeah,
I just
ahead,
can't. You can't unsee these things, you know. Right. And so it's now time for me to enthusiastically and genuinely support women of color, and give them a platform for them to interpret and explain their experience. And for us to, you know, the word even feminism has all sorts of things tied to it, that it would be more accurate and maybe approachable if we called it equalism. You know, let's really talk about equalism rather than feminism.
Things there that I find interesting. Your discussion on the word woke, I have an issue with that also, because it sounds like you have now discovered everything. You know, that you have reached the pinnacle or some point. And we never do that. Isn't our whole life a journey to continue to learn and live in the questions, is always my phrase. that mm-hmm. where else, mm-hmm. what other areas in your life do you have to grow, and what is the next question you need to be asking to learn even more? So I love all of that, and that, you know, the whole need for communication and conversation with openness and lack of defensiveness is really important. And then you were mentioning feminism, and I love that portion in your book where you call it a womanist or womanism. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how you phrase it, but speak a little bit about that, because I love that, because most people do not realize how strongly feminism from the early start was always a white movement. And mm-hmm. People of color have a different reaction. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yes, and that phrase womanism was something that Alice Walker coined to relate to black feminism. And I think it's really important to attribute that to her.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's many aspects about the feminist movement that white women really need to understand. And you just you've mentioned it, and that one is that racism is deeply embedded in the history of feminism. And there's many, many great books to read. One I could suggest is The Mothers of Massive Resistance by Elizabeth McRae. And you will see in the book the very clear role that white women have played in perpetuating white superiority. So one is to first acknowledge the racism that's inherently embedded in the history of the movement. And another is to see that white feminism is real, that it's really like the word womanism is a counter word to feminism, and that was mm-hmm. by design. Another is my awareness of how others experience gender inequality. As a white woman, I have an experience of gender inequality that has to do with equal pay for equal work, maternity leave, things that are about how I integrate into the existing power structure. Women mm-hmm. of color have an experience that's much more about injustice itself. Like they will be race-related, about the police brutality, or more funding for schools, or identifying flaws in the system itself. So you can see there's these two different agendas or starting places within the movement itself, and I was very unaware of that. And I have to again give credit to Gabrielle David, my publisher, and also one of mm-hmm. my neighbors, who I've had the chance to have these important and difficult and conversations that are about very sensitive feelings about this divide. And so many women of color that I have been visiting with do not identify as feminists at all. And so mm-hmm. at this point is where it's really important for me to not be speaking for them, but for me to give them a platform where they can describe what disparities they're experiencing. And the word intersectionality comes in, where they have not only the same ones that I have, but a whole additional layer that have to do with race. And then we might also throw in there's the whole lack or marginalizing within the original feminist movement of people with disabilities, less than able bodies. So mm-hmm. there's a whole layer of important things to discuss, but I think that the main point I'd like to make is Kimberly Crenshaw is someone that everyone can get on board right now and watch a webinar tomorrow night, Wednesday night, called Under the Black Light. It's a free webinar. Everyone can join. You can see her on Twitter. Her handle is @SandyLocks. And she's an example of here's something to go and listen to the voices of people of color. It's free, and it's all related to what we see currently with COVID-19, a very contemporary, a very now moment to listen to the voices of people of color.
Oh, thank you for that. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully mm-hmm. we can put that on the link for this show or something. And someone can see that. So let's going back a little bit to the process of getting the book out there. Was there a particular incident or something that became a catalyst to write this? Because when you were talking about feminism, there was a woman involved with the Emmett Till case that you came upon fairly recently. Just speak of, I know 30 minutes go so quickly. If you could just speak a little bit about that.
Are you referring to Carolyn Bryant? Yeah.
When you were talking about, you know, how women have contributed with racism.
Yes. That book, that the story of Emmett Till was very much a turning point, not only an aha moment, but mind-blowing for me, in the sense that I was 62 years old, sitting on my couch watching Eyes on the Prize during Black History Month, and the story of Emmett Till came up. Now, I'm in my early 60s watching this, and I had never heard the story of Emmett Till. And that really, I stood up off of my couch and said, how is it that I did not know about this? And it really showed me just how completely isolated my white life had been and still was up to that point. And in the story of Emmett Till, the person that launched the turn of events that resulted in his brutal murder was a shopkeeper named Carolyn Bryant. And this was in 1955, a year after Brown versus Board of Education, and when the massive resistance movement was in full swing. And so when I saw her picture and saw the role that she played, that became something that I kept returning back to over and over in my mind until I came to the conclusion in my book of why that bothered me so much, her role. And I think that's a real important part of the conclusion of the book, is why I think Carolyn Bryant lied on the stand about her role in the Emmett Till murder.
Mm-hmm. We live in a bubble, we all do, and we have to be able to look inward and say, why do I believe this? When did I first start believing this? Is it really true? These are the questions, but it's interesting that this just triggered you to go with the book. Now, publishing, now, is the book available yet? Where are we with the book right now, especially with COVID and everything?
Yes. Well, the paperback version of the book has been delayed due to shutdowns of the press. It's being distributed by the University of Chicago Press. But we decided to release the ebook. And so the ebook is out now. It's available on all the major booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's also available. I have a website about the book, and it's called, oddly enough, the title of the book, it's called AnUnintentionalAccomplice.com. That's the website. So you can buy the book there. You can read reviews of the book. You can see different aspects of the backstory, how I came to write the book. So it's out now.
Excellent.
And it's available.
Perfect. And do you have any sense of when the paperback, or I mean the hardback or whatever, however it's coming, the book itself will be coming out?
Yes, it should be in June. We're starting to see a proof of the paperback now for release. And yeah, I'd say probably about a month the paperback will be out. I know many people enjoy reading a paperback more than an ebook, but it's an interesting thing about the ebook is it's out right now, and I'm doing book readings online, and this is information that people can sign up for my email newsletter, and I'm sending out Zoom meetings, and we're doing online book readings, which is kind of
Excellent.
An interesting virtual experience. Yeah, that we had our first one
Excellent.
On the 28th.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So that brought me to the exact question I was going to ask you is, now if people want to contact you, they want to learn more, how would they contact you? And we will also put this on the link, but for people listening, who do you want to contact you? how do people find out more information about these book readings and everything?
Well, the easiest way probably is at my website itself. It's under upcoming events. But I also have an email. It's called info@anunintentionalaccomplice.com. People can write me an email directly. And the information will always be posted up on the website for the book reading.
Okay.
And then on my email newsletter, I send out announcements too. There's a way to sign up for that at the website as well.
And could you give us the website again?
www.anunintentionalaccomplice.com.
Okay, just to be very clear about it. Okay, and again, mm-hmm. it will be on the link. So, what was the goal of the book at this point? Where do you want to go from here now that the book is at least released in the ebook? Where do you see you taking this from here on out? Is there another book?
Yes, I would like to write another book, but I think that will sort of evolve of its own will. Right now, I'm really interested in participating in conversations like this, and I thank you so much for the chance to have these sort of honest and importantly vulnerable conversations, because I think that's where our healing and our strength lies. And I would hope that other white people like me would want to perhaps do the same exploration of their own racial biases and prejudices that we just may not even be aware that we have. And then also to look at from a systemic point of view to see what work has to be done to dismantle this white superiority. And I think the key is until we confront it and name it, then we can't dismantle it. So it's a very important time that we find ourselves in where perhaps there's a willingness to have this conversation and conversations like these. And I would love to be involved in lots and lots of conversations just like this one.
I think it would be incredible. I can envision groups of women that are willing to be open and vulnerable and not judgmental. We judge ourselves and each other so automatically. Could we create a space where in the middle of this, we can just put down all the walls and just look at ourselves and question ourselves and share each other's stories? I think that sounds beautiful. If you could go forward mm-hmm. with groups or something like that, it's very important.
I think the virtual world is a perfect platform for that, you know. The ability, for example, with the book readings, they are interactive and we're talking about the book. We're sharing how different people experienced it in their own life and how we just didn't see it, even though it was unintentional, yet we remain an accomplice until we begin to really take action to change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love that towards the end of the book, you said that the result of it or the goal was to turn you into update your position as a mature white woman amid a world of racial trauma. I love that quote. Guessing you're still on that journey, right?
Yes. And I see that there's so many ways that it's really time for white women to do the work to really create that, you know, there's a phrase out there among women of color that I've heard is, solidarity is only for white women. But I think now is the time for white women to really begin to create a platform for women of color and to enthusiastically be of support to women of color. And perhaps that's some aspect of the women leading and women-led radio is that this is part of our job description as white women is to create a platform for women of color. And to just see that there's been, really to understand the true history of how it is that this great divide came to be. And then do the work to dismantle it. And that really is what I'd like to be part of as well.
That's a beautiful way to end the show. I thank you so much, Carolyn. Please, everybody try to contact her. I think we could all get involved in creating these groups. And I want to put out a special thing to all of our listeners, both in the U.S. and internationally, because we are an international show. And we'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio. We have shows at 9 a.m. on Mondays and Fridays at 2 p.m. And let's understand, we are always in this together. Not, I know that phrase is used a lot now, but we always are and we always have been. So let's be honest and help each other out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.